Grace, the Amy Santiago of Royal Bloggers.
And I'm Jessica, the Dorothy Sporanath of Royal Bloggers.
And we'd like to welcome you to On Air, the podcast where two cynical Brits discuss the latest royal news and the truth behind the stories.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the On Air podcast. We are delighted to have you with us. Just maybe a disclaimer that I know we haven't been very consistent recently because it's been the summer holidays and royals weren't doing anything. And also we had, you know, like one social activity every 6 weeks between us. So we have had things to do. Because of some family things for me at the moment, we might have like shorter episodes or less frequent episodes, or, you know, there might be some variation over the next few weeks. Best place to check is probably our Instagram, and we'll keep people updated about when an episode is coming out. So if you miss us, just go over to Instagram and you'll find out what's going on. Cool. So, but we do have a topic for you this week. Grace, do you want to introduce this? Because it was your thing. It came from you, I suppose. Do you want to introduce this?
Yes, of course. So I got an anonymous ask in the week on my Tumblr, which is very exciting because I don't get that many.
They all come to me. They're like, you said this in the podcast, so I'm good. And I'm like, no, I didn't. Grace did. Go and ask her.
Wait, someone asked me a question. Come on. But I did actually get a question, so thank you. It was a link to two tweets that we will look at in a little bit more detail later from members of the press talking about the fact that they are apparently not covering some royals like the Edinburghs or Princess Anne as much as the King and Queen and the Prince and Princess of Wales, which we thought would be a great starting point to jump off and look at the coverage of the royals in Britain in general, and specifically the Royal Rota, and kind of address a lot of the misconceptions surrounding what the Royal Rota is and what's the point of it.
There are a couple of episodes that are good to listen to because we have talked about a little bit about the press and the royal family in the past. So I would recommend going and listening to our second ever episode. Oh, we were so young and naive. which is about there was a fight between the royals and the BBC, allegedly, which, I mean, it's funny now because it wasn't that long ago, but I'd forgotten it had even happened. And it was such a big deal when we did episode two. And the other one is episode 66, which is where we talked about the phone hacking scandal. And so I think to start off with, it might be helpful to just recap a tiny little bit of that episode 66. Essentially, to understand the Royal Rota, I think you have to kind of understand the relationship between the British royal family and the press. And as I said, we talked about it before, so I'm not going to talk about it in any great detail. But, you know, for centuries, we had the divine right of kings. The king and his family were appointed by God to lead the country and, you know, all sorts of things. That kind of drifted as we became more of a secular country in the 20th century, but there was still a huge amount of deference that was shown towards the royal family. You know, no unsavory articles, we'd delete unflattering photographs, all those sorts of things. Until our good friend, he's not our good friend, that was ironic, or sarcastic, that was sarcastic, Rupert Murdoch arrived on the scene, who brought in the tabloid culture. One of his principles essentially was, you know, nobody's off limits. And who better to talk about than the most famous family in the country? There was a massive uptick in interest in what they were doing. And this also coincided with sort of Princess Anne and Prince Charles, as he was then, becoming young adults and dating and, you know, something that was just seemed to be perfect timing for tabloid fodder. And obviously, of course, with Princess Diana, it increased. But that meant that suddenly there was a massive increase in interest in the royal family in the 1970s, and that was accompanied by a massive increase in the physical numbers of members of the press who wanted to go to engagements and follow the royals and talk about them. And so in the 1970s, they established something which they thought would answer this issue, which was the Royal Rota. And it was essentially established to limit some of the massive intrusion that the royal family were experiencing, kind of for the first time since the beginning of the monarchy.
So there are other rotas, so to speak, which is a group of kind of like a nice sharing system you put in place with children. Like, you get to go this time to take the pictures, and in a couple of weeks someone else gets a turn. And there's other times they're used. So like the President of the United States will have a press rota who come to the White House and, you know, take pictures. So it's not every photographer in the entirety of the United States trying to photograph every single thing the president does. So it's not, it wasn't completely unheard of. The Prime Minister of the UK has a, there will be a rota who does the sort of political, who go to Downing Street and do the political things. But it was the first time they kind of ever needed one for the royals. There were more people to have that interest in. And I think because of the other sort of advents in television news and being able to see royals and seeing these pictures in newspapers, people wanted to know more about them because they weren't just the king, the man who lives in a big house in London that you don't see. Like, you they were real people when you saw them and you got to see what they were up to. You know, it was following on really in the footsteps of even things like Beatlemania, when for the first time people became obsessed with celebrities because they had this access to them that had never been there before.
Yeah, definitely. So it was kind of, it was a decision that was made in response to a particular situation that they found themselves in the 1970s. It just hasn't really changed for the last 50 years. As with all things to do with the royals, why change it if they don't have to? And so essentially, the rota is a pool system, which invites members of the press to attend royal events with the understanding that they are basically like a representative of their part of the media. So like, they might have a journalist and he's there representing all the journalists. And what their obligation to do as part of the Royal Rota is to share their observations or their material, so videos, photographs, if that's part of the industry that they work in, with other members of the Royal Rota afterwards. So rather than every single member of the press having to go to this engagement, you send one person as the representative and they agree that, you know, normally newspapers are all about exclusives and who can get this over this other person. And, you know, in this case, they agree, we'll all share, we'll all kumbaya, be best friends.
Yeah, it was really kind of interesting to read through the, like, the list of things that the rota kind of have to sign up to do, mm-hmm. Or they get their, you know, special rota badge taken off them, because it's the obvious things, like you have to take pictures and share them and you have to share them free of charge. But it's like they had to photograph or write a newspaper report of the full event. They couldn't just do a little bit of it. And things like the material is then available to be used by the UK media for the next 5 years, because obviously, you know, you might not have a photo if you didn't go to the event. And then I quite like the part where they were like, and please dress smart. Like, rock up in jeans and a t-shirt.
Oh, that will not do.
Yeah. But there was, you know, there's a lot of things, like obviously rota material can't be sold, and there's no, obviously, and you have to be like, sort of adequate with the information you provide. You can't just be like, man talks to queen. You have to give the information to the other rota.
Well, that's what you're signing up to do anyway.
Yeah, people do. There are, you know, when you sign up to do it and to become what they call accredited, which means like you've been selected as a special one who can be in the rota. You're not just a random nobody who's taken a picture on their own camera. You are also sort of, it's almost like you're signing a contract, I assume. But it's like you're signing a contract saying, this is what I agree to do in return for being a member of the rota. And if you can't fulfill that, obviously there's a million other journalists and photographers out there who would like to be in the rota and be at engagements and doing it themselves.
You know, those are practices that are not necessarily commonplace in the media. Like, you don't see a lot of the Daily Mail being like, you know what, we just found out this really exclusive piece of gossip about somebody, we should just tell everybody and we should all report on it and it will all be free of charge. Like, that's not something that normally happens in standard practice in, you know, general articles. And it doesn't about like a lot of articles about the royal family. For the purposes of royal engagements and reporting on royal engagements, this system was developed. And it's currently managed by the News Media Association, who are a trade body who represent the news media industry, as one would expect from the name. Details are a little bit sort of opaque and confusing at times, I find. But essentially, to become a member of the rota, you have to be a member of the National Media, what do I call it? News Media Association, not the National Media. You have to be a member of the News Media Association. And the big national newspapers don't have to like apply for every single engagement or reapply every year or anything like that. They are kind of standing members. So we're talking about the big names everyone knows, you know, the Sun, the Daily Mail, the Telegraph, the Times. They're all sort of standing members because they report on the royal so much and because they're such big organizations. So they're sort of blanket rota participants. So that doesn't mean that, you know, the Daily Mail will be every single event, but it means that they are always on the rota and could be asked to be the representative for the press at that particular engagement. Regional and local news media have to apply to get a rota pass for specific events. So yeah, to summarize, essentially, say there's like five places that are available. They look at all of the people who've got standing rota passes. They look at all the applications in the local and the regional media. And by some means that we're not quite sure about, they decide who gets those five passes. And then whoever gets them has to share their information with everybody.
There is, you know, I think it's really, it feels really obvious to me, but I don't think it is obvious to everyone that there is predominantly almost entirely UK media, because these are the British Royals.
They have to be NMA members. So yeah.
Yeah. They have to be members of, you know, the British News Media Agency. Yeah. And I think something that's come up time and time again is the fact that, you know, CBN or CBS or Fox or, you know, a big news media conglomerations across the world, like in America or in India, don't have this immediate access to royal events because they're not members of the rota. And I think the rota at heart is to give the British public and the British media equal access because it's in Britain, which feels very obvious to me, but I think maybe to the wider world doesn't seem that obvious.
I think that's an important thing that sometimes is missed out, is that this whole thing, again, we don't know the detail, and I will get to that later, but the whole thing is administered by the NMA. And so that is a UK-based news media trade body. And you have to be members of that. So like they are the people who are awarding the passes to people. There are exceptions. If an event takes place at like a royal palace, for example, then it's the royal household who will decide who, because you might get a rota pass, but that doesn't give you access to the building. If it's like a royal house or, you know, inside Kensington Palace or whatever, then you'd have to get permission from the royal household. If it's a private event, then you would have to get permission from the host, whoever that is. And I do have a pertinent example, and I hate talking about this because every time I do, I feel like people are going to be like, oh, Jessica's talking about her, how special she is and how, you know, involved in royal events she is and blah, blah, blah. And I really hate being that person, but this is genuinely relevant.
I love it.
So I have been, if you don't know, I work in the charity sector and I have been involved in planning royal engagements from the side of the charity in the past. And there have been a couple of times where we kind of decided that we didn't want the media in our building for various reasons. And so they were allowed to sort of gather outside, and we had to talk to like the local authority and the police about how to, you know, make sure that everybody was safe and they had cordons up and all those sorts of things. But we decided that they weren't allowed in our building. And so even if they have a rota pass, that would just qualify them to kind of be there and stand around outside. It wouldn't give them access into the building. So most engagements, this whole thing will be sort of led by the NMA, and they will be the ones who give you your pass. So your pass will say it's from the NMA on it. But there are occasions where the royal household or the charity or community group or whoever who are hosting the event will also have some say in deciding, like, you know, if just the NMA can't unilaterally decide that the press have access to private buildings. So there will be occasions where they're not the only people deciding who is on the rota and where they can go.
Yeah. And, you know, I think charities and town halls and, you know, have their own photographers as well, like the in-house ones who will also do it, you know, so they're not letting all the press off the street just to come and nose around their buildings.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what we did. We had a private photographer for ourselves, and the royal household in question also brought their own photographer. So that's how we got around it. It's not a complicated topic. Like, you know, we couldn't just say what is the royal rota and have that be our episode, because it would be like 20 minutes long. but I think that it's an interesting thing to talk about, because I think you mentioned something earlier about there being a lot of confusion about it. And, you know, sometimes it's worth pointing out things that might seem obvious. And so, like, one thing I think is the royal rota is a term that is bandied around a lot on social media as a sort of synonym for the press. And it's not the same thing. The royal rota is the system that exists so that the media can go and report on engagements. It's not every single person who ever wrote about or reported about a royal. So I'm not saying that the royal rota are necessarily perfect, but if you think about a lot of the most unpopular or controversial stories with like people on Twitter, they were written by people like Dan Wootton, Jeremy Clarkson, Piers Morgan, none of whom are on the royal rota. None of they don't participate in it at all. And you know, there have been people who've talked about people on the royal rota actually being the more conservative, I say that with a soft C, as in more cautious, not Tory. Well, they might be that as well, but anyway, they're more conservative members of the press when it comes to reporting about the royals, because they have a relationship that they have to uphold. Whereas Dan Wootton, he can say whatever he wants because he doesn't have to keep anybody on side, you know, to do his job as a gossip columnist or whatever he does now.
Yeah, I think, you know, it can be really confusing when you have, like you mentioned, people like Dan Wootton or Piers Morgan writing articles about royals. They are just gossip columnists at their heart, you know. They are opinionists. They give opinions in newspapers or on the news. That's their job. Then you have the Royal Rota, which we mentioned is the system. And then within the Royal Rota, we have people who are, you know, a photographer, a journalist. You have people who are the BBC News, ITV mm-hmm. News. Mm-hmm. You have your local sort of smaller publications. And then you have your royal correspondents who are almost like become the face of it. And they're the ones people will think of. When you say Royal Rota, you will think of, you know, people like Richard Palmer or Dicky Arbiter or Victoria Ward, and this sort of big selection of people who are often the ones tweeting or going on Instagram. So yeah, these people are often the ones reporting on royal engagements continuously, consistently. But even with like amongst themselves, they don't all sort of subscribe to being royal correspondents. Some are royal editors, some are royal writers, royal reporters. And there's no kind of like, you have to do this to be the royal correspondent and you do this to be the royal. It's just people picking a name really to be the top one in their job. And that leads to the confusion because people sit there and assume that the royal correspondents might be more well-informed than other members of the royal rota, or the royal editor is higher than the royal correspondent, when actually they're exactly the same job, just given different titles.
I think it is important to be as precise as you can. And I understand it's difficult because, as you say, they all call themselves something different but might do exactly the same job, and it doesn't, you know. But I think it is important to be precise, because when you say things like the press are terrible or the press treated this person terribly, I do think that it kind of feeds into this whole like post-truth world that we live in, where like people don't feel that they can trust the mainstream media, so they go to these, you know, Russell Brands and Jordan Petersons on YouTube and you know, get sucked into this kind of conspiracy theory world, which can be really damaging to people. I think sometimes it's if you just say like, yeah, the press are bad, then everybody starts to be distrustful of everybody, when actually the press is a lot of individual people as well as institutions. You know, if somebody's talking about like Kate and how she was followed by the paparazzi all the time, they'll be like, oh, you know, that was your fault to Richard Palmer. And it's like, he wasn't out there photographing them. Like, you could say that he might be part of, I don't know, the general culture of interest in Kate, but if it was a photographer who did something, blame the photographer. If it was the editor who did something, blame the editor. If it was the journalist, blame the journalist. So I think there's a lot of like referring to the Royal Rota when what you mean is the press or this particular outlet or this journalist, because oftentimes the person who wrote it is not part of the Royal Rota at all. Sorry, we went off on my conspiracy theory soapbox there.
I quite liked it. And I also think that the finished article that you get in a newspaper or in news online journalism or is often not dictated by the news reporter who wrote the article. It is the editors of the newspaper who were trying to push a narrative.
Well, famously, and headlines are written by a different person to who wrote the article.
Yeah, which is why headlines and articles rarely match up. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, a lot of not just rural reporters, but reporters in general talk about the fact that the article that is published with their name on it is not the article they wrote and mm-hmm. handed in to be put in the newspaper. At his heart, no individual reporter is as big as the media conglomerate that, you know, runs Fox News. You know, there's no one like that. So at its heart, whatever news story you have in any newspaper is always going to be somewhat dictated by the newspaper or the news channel itself.
Yeah, like a 21-year-old who left university and is desperate for a journalism job and takes one writing about the best pair of jeans in the Daily Mail. I don't blame them for being, you know, they have to have a job at the end of the day. I don't blame them for, you know, the front page rhetoric on the Daily Mail. I think we are naturally kind of leading into our next section, which is kind of like the good and bad parts of the Rota. Should we start off with the good?
Yeah, let's start with the good. I like the good.
So I guess this is not really a good thing, actually. It's more of a defense of the system rather than a good thing about the system, which might sound like, you know, pedantic, but I think there is a distinction. Because the fact of the matter is, you cannot have any Tom, Dick and Harry from the press turning up wherever a royal is at any point in time. Like, it just can't happen. I think it's a security nightmare, not just for the royals, because they don't know, you know, whoever, any random stranger could be turning up with a photo, with a camera, which is, you know, I don't know, got a secret bomb in it or something. And they don't know, because they're just inviting any old random person who they want. So it's a security risk for them. It's also a security risk for the public, you know, to have like perhaps a small street that's jammed by a large crowd of people, and they have no way of knowing how many people are going to turn up, so they can't plan, they don't know what cordons to put out. You know, it could create like stampedes and all these sorts of things that are, you know, crowding. We've seen in recent years, you know, people dying in these freak crowds and things. So it's a security nightmare to just have any, just say, we're doing this, if you want to come, you can. That's that. Like, that just isn't going to work. There has to be some system that limits the number of royals, that limits the number of members of the press who are in attendance.
I was going to say, yeah, I was like, it's so necessary, especially in the modern era, for there not to be 300 photographers at every event.
Exactly. So it's just not going to happen. I also think that there's... an aspect of the royal's work which is different from like a celebrity. You know, a royal is not going to a red carpet to do an interview. They're often going to meet with very vulnerable people, children, people who are at the most difficult point in their life, who don't want 12 cameras jammed in their face. So I think there is also like an ethics issue of having any old random member of the press close to a vulnerable child with a camera. And, you know, like, we don't know how many people are going to turn up and watch you tell us about your mum dying, Timmy, but, you know, who knows, as many members of the press as they want, you know, that just doesn't work. So I think that's a reality that we have to accept, is that we cannot have a system where every member of the press who wants to go to an engagement can go to an engagement. There has to be some kind of limit. And so this is where the defense part kicks in, is that I think that if we accept that reality, I would rather have a system that is managed by somebody who is not the royals.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah. I think, you know, Harry has complained in quite a lot of his interviews about the fact that he wasn't allowed to kick members of the Rota off who wrote articles about him and his family. And I am sympathetic to that, because I can completely understand why you as an individual would say, well, if they said this horrible thing about me, why do I have to walk around with them and invite them to things and reward them, essentially? I can understand on a human level exactly why he feels that way. But I think it's dangerous to allow the royals to kind of have unlimited say based on just who they like and who they don't like, or who they decide to be a legitimate journalist and who they don't. Because then, you know, the people who are often missed out of this conversation about the royals and the press are the members of the general public. And if millions of members of the general public decide that they want to get their news from the Daily Mail, I might think the Daily Mail's nonsense. And I might think it's a useless, you know, and it's a damaging newspaper and all these sort of things. But millions of other people don't. And if I want to reach those millions of other people, I have to accept that and invite them in. Like, who am I to decide that those millions of people, because of the newspaper that they read, are not worthy of knowing what the family of their head of state is doing? So I just think I understand the impulse to want to have control, but I think it's dangerous. And so the defense of some kind of Rota system is that it's practically impossible to not have some kind of Rota system. And if we're going to have one, we might as well have it being organized by somebody who's not the royals.
Yeah, I had that written down, not quite as neatly, in a lot of blur. But I think it's, I don't think it is always successful, but one of the elements of a rota or a pool system that works so well is that it does reduce this kind of bias. So your favourite special newspaper friend who always writes the nice article saying that you're working really hard doesn't write every article about you. And, you know, I think in a world where not only are the royal family our family of our head of state, but they are unelected, the last thing you want is for all the press coverage around them to have come from them, because that is just ripe for a dictatorship. It really is. And what you need dissenters. And, you know, I always think, I talk to children a lot about fake news, and children are really, really good at telling you that if you find something on the internet, you have to find it on lots of legitimate websites to know it is true. You can't just trust one source. But I think adults, you know, read not every news, but they will trust certain news sources over others, because if it's political leanings or, you know, the opinions it gives because they align with your own, and then they don't check them in other places. So if, and like, you know, I'll go back to Harry, because I took a lot of my notes in the section from Harry's interviews about the Royal Rota. You know, if Harry is saying he doesn't want the British tabloids at, you know, his engagements because they've written unsavoury things about his family, then you are not only cutting off the vast majority of the British population who read the tabloids as their main source of news, but you are assuming that the articles written in other newspapers are factually accurate. And I'm not saying they're not. I'm not saying The Guardian, for example, sitting down in and every article writing a little lie just to trick everyone because people trust them. But The Guardian isn't more trustworthy than any other newspaper. They just tell different stories. And the people who are, you know, often more highly educated or left-leaning, you know, in their political views, will read articles that align with their views and go, well, I know that vaccines are good for you, so I trust this. And I think you need to have lots of sources to know something is true, or at least more likely to be true.
I think appointing themselves as the guardians of deciding what is and isn't good media is a little bit worrisome, because more often than not, I imagine good media to them is just going to be who writes nice articles about us, who lets us go unchallenged. And that's always the danger of when you give the people, you know, it just doesn't make any sense to have the people who are being written about be the ones who decide who gets to write about them. It just take a step back, and logically it doesn't make sense. And I think in episode 66, something we talked about there is like, it's not the royals' job to reform the press. So when we say all of this, we're not saying the Daily Mail is good and that the Daily Mail should continue as it is, and that the Sun is good and that Rupert Murdoch is a great guy and we're so sad he's retiring. You know, we're not saying any of that. What we're saying is that that's an issue for somebody who is not Prince William to decide. Like, that is a reform issue that should be going through government and, you know, other avenues that are not the royal family. It's not their job to decide based on no experience and, you know, what is and isn't good media, basically. So I like that element of it.
I like the fact that the concept of a rota should mean a fair distribution of the news, because big media, and this kind of goes back to what we were literally just saying about how, you know, not all media is treated equally, but, you know, your TV news and your big broadsheet and tabloid newspapers have infinitely more funds than your local community-run newspaper that is focused on the charity rather than the royal. You know, there are different sort of interests and funds at stake. But through a rota system, it shouldn't matter. It should be that everyone, no matter whether you are a tiny community newspaper in Inverness or the Daily Mail, you all have the same access to the same pictures, the same captioning, the same copy that's been written, so the words. And, you know, I'm not naive enough to say that that is exactly what happens every single time. I'm not saying that, you know, that little small community newspaper in Inverness can write the same article. I can go back to the Daily Mail, because, you know, things happen. But the concept of a rota is that there is this fair distribution for the smaller media. And I think it does mean there are lots of small newspapers and small news websites out there who have got so much information on them because the rota system exists, And it wouldn't have if that rota didn't exist. You know, I think if you think about the royal fandom, the heart of the royal fandom are these predominantly women who have other jobs but run blogs about the work the royals they support do. And they can't go to every single engagement because they have their own jobs and families and things to do, but they can collect this information from rota sources. And I think, you know, that would never happen if the rota didn't exist in the first place.
They do, as far as I know, this might not be accurate, and I'm sure that somebody who knows can tell me, but just based on what I read, like, they do seem to do a good job of making sure that when they're allocating the rota places, if it is an away day, like a visit to Liverpool, I don't know why I keep using Liverpool, but I was looking at something in the Liverpool Echo that was on Princess Anne, so that's why. They will make sure that somebody like the Liverpool Echo is also going to be there. So if it's in London, it might just be national papers who get access because it's not that regional. But if they're going away to somewhere specific, they do, as far as I can tell, seem to do a good job based on the fact that often the best coverage of these regional engagements is the regional newspaper.
Yeah, definitely.
Can I move on to my bads?
Yes, let's go for the bads.
Go for the bads. Okay. So despite everything we've just said, I think the main argument against it is that it could be damaging to a free press or transparency or accountability. I think firstly, the fact that, and this is again something that Harry has said, that rota passes go to members of the NMA, the News Media Association. And so that does mean that a small grassroots newspaper, and I'm not talking about like the Liverpool Echo, which is a long-standing local newspaper, I'm talking about like an online blog that's run by a bunch of teenagers but is really successful and popular amongst Gen Z, you know, that kind of thing. They are like BuzzFeed, you know, those sorts of places. I don't know what the equivalent is for young people now. I don't think people are on BuzzFeed. Is like Facebook now. It's like, it's a millennial thing. It's not a Gen Z. But you know, they're not likely to get passes unless for some specific reason they are invited, because maybe it pertains to something, a campaign they're doing or something. I don't know. They're very unlikely because they're not going to be members of the NMA. And so that does mean that even though there is a rota system, the people who are part of the rota tend to be from large national newspapers, and they tend to be white, middle class, university educated, center right politically. They all tend to be a fairly homogenous group of people. And this is something that Harry was saying. I think there are large sections of the press that will be cut out because they're not members of the NMA. So maybe the Royal Rota isn't at fault, but it could be administrated by somebody different who doesn't require you to be a member of their organization in order to participate. And maybe that's a way to reform it. But then I think what the rota could do, or what you could argue it does, is it that it creates reliance on whoever is the rota representative of that particular day. And the most famous example I can think of that going wrong was around the Ukraine comments that Prince William made. So we talked about it in this podcast. I can't remember which episode it was, but William said at an engagement that we aren't used to seeing war in Europe. Now, as we said in our episode at the time, that's a stupid comment anyway, because like Ireland, he was like, we are not used to seeing war and conflict. It was like, your family member got blown up by the IRA. Like, yes, you are used to seeing war and conflict in Europe recently. So it was a silly comment anyway. But the first thing that came out from the reports, and it was Richard Palmer, who was the rota representative on the day, the first quote that came out was that we are essentially not used to seeing it in Europe, but we're used to seeing it in Africa and Asia. And it specifically said, we're used to seeing like bloodshed and conflict in Africa and Asia. And that blew up, understandably, as a quote, because it's terrible. And then video came out that showed the full quote. And he said the Europe thing, which was silly, but, you know, just a mistake, I think. But he'd never said anything about Africa or Asia or anything in that context. So it wasn't true what Richard Palmer had reported. And I think imagine if there hadn't been a video there, every single member of the press would have been reliant on Richard Palmer and his report, which we know was incorrect. But because he was the rota representative, there was nobody else there who could have corroborated or denied the story. He was the sole representative of the journalism community in that particular event. you know, even if he'd come out and said, I'm sorry, I misheard it, if there hadn't been video in this sort of post-truth world we live in, as I mentioned, people would have gone, oh, well, the royals pressured him. And that's why he took it, you know, but I believe William said it. So, you know, if there hadn't been a videographer there, it would have been a massive issue. And that was something that damaged the royals. But if you think about it on the flip side of it, imagine a situation where William had said the Africa and Asia thing and Richard Palmer had thought, well, I don't really want to annoy William at the moment because I'm hoping to get this really big exclusive interview with him. So I just won't put that in there. That means that members of the public are not hearing something that they do deserve to hear. And so I think the biggest concern about the way that the royal rota actually works, and not the sort of concept of having a rota, but the way that it actually works in practice, is, you know, does it damage objectivity to have every single engagement filtered through the lens of one person's experience?
Yeah, that is actually the exact example I used in my PSAT lesson last week with the children.
Ah.
When we were talking about, like, how... even if a newspaper isn't, like, I mean, I know this was a mistake, but if they're not, like, out and out lying, they might not be telling the whole truth. And I think that's such a key thing. And it leads in something that, another thing that Harry said, honestly, Harry's interviews were goldmine for this. He said something about how the rota decide the priority of the story. And he's exactly right, because if you imagine the rota is made up of three journalists and a photographer, and those three journalists all come from Murdoch Media, and Murdoch wants to push a narrative that Prince Harry is a bad father, then all of their articles, even if they are giving you the facts of the engagement, will spin them to say it in a way that, but he wasn't home with his children, Harry's a horrible dad. And they're not lying, they're not coming out and, you know, saying something that didn't happen. I'm not saying Harry punched three children. They're just giving you the facts, but they're doing it in a way that suggests the narrative that a person wants pushed. And if all your information is coming from these three people and this photographer, then everyone is getting the same information. So he's completely right that the priority of the story is decided by the rota. And I don't think, you know, the better option is for it to be decided by the royals.
No.
That would be worse.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you have this closed circuit system of journalism, like you said, we don't know we are getting the full picture of what is happening in engagement unless there is a full video of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. The problem isn't with a rota system, because that's inoffensive and it's necessary, as we said. It's with how it's administered and how it's organized and how it's run. And I think that, you know, through doing research for this, it is quite vague, and I can understand why it might be frustrating, because it, I mean, we know sort of the basic details of, like, how the rota operates, but we don't know. So the big elite institutions like the Daily Mail and so on, I say elite in that they've been running for a long time and are very popular, they have a standing pass, but can they be removed? You know, I don't think it's a good idea if they're removed just because they wrote an article that William didn't like, but can they be removed if they did something really, really terrible? If so, what's the criteria for their removal? Have organizations who've applied for a rota pass been turned down, and why might that be? Like, we just, you know, how do they decide in particular, you know, if there's two journalists who are available and both want to go to an event, do they just randomly pick one? You know, how do they actually administrate it? And I think that's the problem, really. And again, I'm kind of nicely leading into our next section, is like, there needs to be a rota, but does it, and I don't think it should be run by the royals, but does it also sit under the fact that it sits under the NMA also make sense as the best approach? I don't know.
I think you are right. That does lead very nicely into our next
section. Yeah. Our next section is kind of looking at, I guess, alternatives, and particularly what other royal families do. So I didn't look at every single country in the world, obviously, but I mean, I just want to start off by saying I looked at the Spanish royal family website, couldn't find anything.
Yeah, I did go through the European monarchies, and for like over half of them, I was like, I genuinely don't understand what is happening on this website. So I gave up very quickly.
Yeah. But yeah, I couldn't find anything on the Spanish royal family. So if anybody knows how they operate the press side of things, please do let me know, because I couldn't find anything on there. But I have Scandinavia. So essentially, their system is that they have their calendar of events, which is much better being updated than the British Royal Family's calendar. And what they'll do is they'll put, like, at the bottom of the calendar thing on their website, they will put a contact detail for usually the host of the event. So if they're at a hospital, it'll be the head of comms for that hospital. Or if it's being in a royal building, it'll be the head of comms for them. But, you know, usually it's the host of the event. And they basically say, anybody who wants a press pass, contact this person and they'll decide. So it is, unless it's taking place in like a royal building, it is pretty much out of the hands of the royals entirely. But there also isn't this kind of clear rota system. It's basically you go to the host and they decide. So that's how they kind of broadly, all the Scandinavian countries kind of do their system.
It took me ages to get my head, not until ages to get my head around it, but I went through the three Scandinavian websites and they all like phrase it very slightly differently. Like they're not all called like event hosts. Some of them are like organizers. And I was like, what do you mean? But you know, like I said, it all boils down to the fact that the person who is doing the event gets to decide who goes. And I think, you know, if you imagine that, you know, in a British context, the king is going to visit Warburton's because to promote bread, I don't know. But
sounds like something you would do.
You know, the engagement is not actually about the king. It is about Warburton's and it is about the work that Warburton's does. So through that logic, it does make a lot of sense that Warburton's have at least some element of say in who is there to promote their shop, brand, business, whatever you call these things.
It's sensible for their context is what I would say. I think, you know, it does that thing of getting out of the hands of the royals so that they're not the immediate ones who get to decide, which I like. But I think it's easier for them to do that because there are less members of the press. They're smaller countries who have less outlets that write about royals. And they also have a better relationship with them than the British royal family has with the press over here. So it is more manageable because like the hospital or whatever is probably going to get, I don't know, 4 media requests and then they'll be able to say yes or no to those 4 media people and that's about it. But if I think about my experience again, there is absolutely no way that we could have coped at my charity with managing requests from a dozen different broadsheet tabloid newspapers across the UK. Like the Daily Mail are emailing us and the Sun emailing us. And, you know, we didn't have the infrastructure, the staff, the experience to manage any of that. And we were not a tiny charity. So if it's a small community group that's run by volunteers, you know, Doris from the church isn't going to really know how to manage the media request that's coming from the Daily Mail. Like that's just not something that they're equipped to be able to do. In the UK, it wouldn't necessarily work to just copy that system because I think more often than not, you'd end up with a system where people just go, no press, because it's easier than having to manage all the press requests. Or it will end up being shambolic and potentially service users being placed in uncomfortable situations and all that sort of thing. So I just think it works for those contexts because the demand is smaller, but I don't think it's a system that you could just replicate over here. But I do think, as you say, there are positive parts of it, of like having the host have some sort of say. They could be the ones who invite the specialist media in who are not members of the NMA, perhaps. You know, that might be something to think about for our system.
Like you said, it's in no way a perfect solution, but yeah. I think there are elements of it that can be used. And I think having everywhere in the UK is in a local authority, you know, it's in a community. And I think there are Lord Lieutenants and there are mayors and there are Lord Mayors and there are council members everywhere. So it would be implausible to suggest that it happened, you know, now. It couldn't be a switcheroo. But I think as a long-term idea, having some kind of local community communication person, figure, who is part of the mayor's office or the Lord Lieutenant's office, but not political, you know, like a PTA, you have your treasurer, yeah. You know, it's like a separate person to kind of help with these things would be a sort of a way to go. Because like you said, you know, Warburton's themselves could easily probably sort out press, but a local bakery by Mr. Smith couldn't do it. But perhaps, you know, Mrs. Smith could get some help from the local communications officer who works in the city. To do the fielding of requests. And obviously it's not, and you couldn't just say, oh, and tomorrow we're setting up 55,000 new offices in the UK, so can you just staff them? But you could start to build it up.
The reason it works in Scandinavia is because this is not, I think mostly Sweden I'm thinking of, but I'm sure, I think Denmark's a bit wobbly, but they have a really good calendar. So they will tell you, we are going to this thing in 6 weeks, and they update their calendars on a regular basis. The problem is that in the UK, if William and Kate announce a week before that they're going to a particular place, if it was the host who decides, that means that that host has a week to manage all of these requests. So they can't really easily consult with, you know, the local authority or whatever. So for that system to work where the host has to decide would also require the royals to announce things more in advance, which they should do anyway. So it's a good thing to do. But I just think, you know, it's one of those, it would need, you'd need to work out the kinks.
And I know that, like, of all of the royal families, Sweden have like the best in-house press team, like mm-hmm. at responding to sort of royal queries and things like that. And I think Britain is famously bad at everything to do with things like that.
No comment to everything.
You know, it is completely, not completely, but it's pretty much impractical in the current state of how the British royals deal with the media and with their upcoming engagements to put this into place in Britain. They just need to change everything about themselves.
Yeah, yes, exactly, which is fine. The only other system I have is the Netherlands.
Yes, me too.
Okay, great. Because I'm glad. I thought maybe you'd have like Belgium, Monaco, and stuff. And I was like, no, but the Netherlands is the most interesting one.
I couldn't find anything for anyone else apart from like they have a press page on the website, but it doesn't work. The links.
Yes, oh, is that Belgium?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I did look at them and couldn't find anything. The other one that is interesting, other than Scandinavia, is the Netherlands, which I find them the most interesting approach. So their press access is oftentimes very similar to the BRF because they, the British Royal Family, because they do have a pool. So they have a rota system. So like in certain engagements, it's not for every single engagement, but for certain engagements where there's limited spacing, for example, they will operate a rota system. So they do have some elements that are very similar to the way the British Royal Family do it. But instead of accreditations being managed by a trade body, they are managed by an organization called the Government Information Service, which is part of the Ministry of General Affairs and is overseen by the Prime Minister. And that service manages media relations for the Prime Minister, for the government, and for the royal household. And they've done a lot of things around it, but like they've got their own press code and all sorts of things for the media. Part of me is wary about upsetting the balance between the Prime Minister and the monarch. In the UK, that's a very delicate balance, which we've talked about a lot. And I don't, part of me was wary of throwing off that balance by giving the prime ministers, you know, the right to oversee who goes to royal engagements. But I do really like the idea of having a body that isn't like a media institution, as in like it's not a trade body or anything like that, with its own sort of press code to govern things. I think that's a really interesting idea.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of like that thing where, like, an inquiry, like, it's not run by any of the people involved, like, the say it's an inquiry into whether or not a crime was dealt with properly. Like, if they're not representing the police, they're not representing the victim, they're not representing the perpetrator, they are representing justice, which is a very broad thing. But that concept of having, you know, a separate person who represents the freedom of the press, the freedom of, you know, information. And I think the thing is, it would be incredibly useful for the royals and for the politicians. And like we said earlier, like they are the only groups of people that I think should be analysed and criticised on such an intense level because they have such a power over everyone else's lives. Mm-hmm. So to have a separate body that is like, right, for this engagement, we need to work with the local charity to find out who they'd want, mm-hmm. And to work with, you know, local media, national media, to sort of get the best people in place would work really well. And I mean, it would still require the royals to be slightly more open with things, like saying where they're going more than a week in advance, and a lot of the same issues we had before, you know, with the British royals just not being very organised being an issue. But it would also kind of level that playing field between the politicians and the royals, because I think a lot of the time when a story comes out about the royals that people don't like, they go, why are you focusing on them when there's a politician doing something? And it's they're both equal in my eyes. You have to judge them fairly. And I'm not saying that politician isn't being treated fair. Like, maybe there are news articles about the politician, but the key thing about journalism is it is at its heart now, you know, newspapers are made to make money.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Of course, people are more likely going to read an article about a royal than a politician no one knows about. Mm-hmm. So it would balance that kind of more fairly.
The NMA are independent to the royals, which is good, but they are not independent. Because they are loyal to their members. And so even if they've got local and regional members, they, you know, they have to apply for access. They don't get the same level of access that the big national newspapers do, which makes sense. But, you know, there is a disparity. But also it does shut out large sections of the media. By creating something separate, it kind of has the benefit of being like the NMA in that it's independent from the royals, but it also is kind of independent from the press. Like, the goal, that its loyalty is to transparency and accountability and not to individual, outlets. You know, they might have a clearer criteria for deciding who gets to be part of the rota and who doesn't, you know, what your obligations are, just a bit more transparency. So I think it's an interesting idea of kind of taking the rota as it is and just giving it to somebody else who has a bit of a step back and isn't sort of more loyal to the press and the royals, or to the royals and the press. That makes sense.
I also think it would sort of allow the opportunity for royals to have that kind of more open communication with this independent body, because they're not the ones writing the articles. Like, you know, say they were going to do an engagement and bring Prince George, and they were like, look, we're bringing Prince George to this engagement. We don't want it to be public, so we don't want it to be loads and loads of crowds, but we want you to know that he will be there. You know, a newspaper is going to send people who are going to get good pictures of Prince George, because that's going to sell. Whereas, you know, the press is, you know, I'm going on press station, this new press in group we're setting up, they, you know, might be able to balance that with having, you know, access to who will be the best for the job, because they're not doing what the royals, so they're not picking, you know, Kate's best friend to take a nice picture of George. But they're also not picking the person that's going to make them the most money. And I think it gives, it also sort of, it, I think it would improve relations between the royals and the media, because there isn't this kind of fact that the royals are kind of like being fed on by the media to make money. It balances it. It makes it more fair.
Yeah. I mean, theoretically, it's something that could be done by IPSO, the Independent Press Standards Organization, but they are not, they're very famously not fantastic. So that's a conversation for a different day. So they probably wouldn't, as things currently stand, wouldn't be able to deliver a much better system than the NMA. But theoretically, there is a regulator. So they could do something. But anyway, yeah. So I think, you know, that's quite a lot for a Sunday afternoon that we've set the world to rights. We've decided what the rules should do for the press instead of the current system. Come on, Kensington Palace, hire me. Yeah.
Let us be in charge. So this all came from this anonymous ask, which linked me to two specific tweets that came from two members of the Royal Rota. The people in question, the Royal correspondents or Royal editors, see, they gave each other different names, are Matt Wilkinson, who is the Royal Editor for The Sun, which is a tabloid newspaper, and Victoria Ward, who is the Royal Correspondent at The Telegraph, which is a broadsheet newspaper. So good range.
Yeah.
So essentially what happened was Richard Palmer, who was a Royal Correspondent for the Daily Express, posted a tweet during the Princess of Wales's textiles engagements, just casually. And another Twitter user responded and said, well, why aren't, this is great, love this, but why aren't the rota accompanying Prince Edward to Turkey, Sophie to Rome, Princess Anne on her engagements, but they're still covering the Sussexes? And then the Royal correspondents responded. So Victoria Ward said, well, there is no system in place for the media to follow those royals. The engagements are rarely announced in advance. And Matt Wilkinson followed that up with, if the palace asks us to go or gave notice and provided access to cover the Edinburgh's or Anne, then we might, but they don't. And believe me, we have had these conversations. ...
It's a very nice encapsulation of their different newspapers' approaches there, isn't it? Like,
yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
Might.
Yeah. And they asked you your opinion, didn't they?
yeah, they kind of asked how I, as a British person, felt about the fact that allegedly the British royals aren't giving any access to the Royal Rota for the engagements of people who aren't the King, Queen, William or Kate.
Yeah, so that's why we've explained what the Royal Rota is. We've padded this out into a more full episode. Because I think one of the reasons is, I don't know, is my answer. I don't know if you have a clearer thought, you might do, but I think it's helpful maybe to understand how I think about these things. So when an issue like this comes up, my first thing that I ask myself is like, does this situation seem to go against the principles that royals should have to abide by? So that might be specific rules like the gift policy that have been that's been created, or it might be sort of conventions of sort of, you know, being nonpartisan. If it's a no, then I ignore it. It's not an issue. If I'm not sure, I put it on a shelf. If it's yes, I then go on to think about the next thing, which is looking at all the angles, so trying to pad out my argument, trying to make it more coherent, but also thinking, you know, how would I respond if this situation was being done by a royal I didn't like or by a royal that I did like, and trying to find if there's areas of bias. And if there's areas of bias, then I might shelve it and sort of think, okay, well, how do I think about this argument in a different way? And I won't say anything about it publicly. If it's, you know, if it's, I think, no, I would rethink this no matter who was in the situation and I'm pretty convinced of it, then it goes on to the last stage, which is where I think about what my opponents would say. This is the debater in me. I think, what would somebody who disagrees with me say? And that's to find the flaws in my own argument and to strengthen my argument so that I can kind of preempt what people might say in response to me. And then if I've done all those three stages, that's when I would put something on Tumblr. Obviously, if it's like, I like Kate's shoes or I don't like Kate's shoes, it doesn't go through all these steps. But if it's something like this, which is a serious thing, then it goes through all of these stages. And I think, I just want to say in my defense, I think this is why people think that I'm really arrogant. Because when I talk on this podcast about things, I know that I have a tone of like, well, this is the right way to think. And that's just that. But the reason is that 70% of situations don't get to the end of this stage and I put them on a shelf and I don't talk about them publicly. If I am talking about an issue publicly and saying my opinion on it, it means that I have gone through this really lengthy, rigorous process in my head like a robot and it's come to the end. So I, in my mind, if it's worth me talking about it publicly, I do think I'm right because I've gone through all of those stages. So I think other people maybe just say what they think about things. And there's, you know, that's probably more human and normal. So I'm not trying to just, you know, denigrate them or attack them or anything. That's just how they operate. But I only talk about things if I've gone through all of these stages and I am sure that it's like rock solid. So the reason I wanted to mention that was just because at the moment, this situation for me is on the shelf around the first or second question, probably the first question.
I am, there's the two parts of my brain. So the monkey part of my brain that just says things was like, I don't care that they're not covering what Sophie does because I go out of my way to avoid coverage of Sophie anyway. Yeah. In my new position as the chief Edinburgh hater.
She really not the city of, it's a lovely city.
Kind of Edinburgh, the city. The more logical side of my brain, I found it really hard because like my natural reaction was to be like, I literally don't care. As a British person. But then when I thought about it a bit more, I was like, I don't have enough information, because even reading their tweets, some of the things didn't make sense to me that they said. I feel like there is something missed because it's a tweet. They've only got, I don't know how many characters a tweet is. You know, it's not a full press statement about their disappointment in the fact they can't follow these royals. The fact Victoria Ward mentioned that they rarely announce these engagements in advance. I don't think that necessarily is always true for people like Anne. I found engagements for her up until mid-November on the website this morning. There's the fact that while these are members of the Royal Rota, they are journalists separate to that. And of course, a royal reporter is going to report on the Invictus Games because it's very royal adjacent. There are ex-royals in attendance. It was founded by Harry while he was a royal. And that sells. So your editor's going to go, could you go to the Invictus Games and cover that and not worry about the fact that Prince Edward's opening a coffee shop? You know, I can see both sides of it. I also then went through the responses to the tweets, which were enjoyable, which tended to be a real mixture between people saying, Anne and Edward and Sophie don't want you there, you horrible rota people. Mm. That's why you don't get told. They specifically hate you. And then being like, oh, but you still cover the Sussexes. That doesn't make sense. Does Buckingham Palace give you their details? Which is further proof to me that no one can read. And then I kind of ended up on a bit of a, like, on a bit of a fence with kind of like two sides of arguments that very much depend on facts I don't know about.
Well, this is exactly it. This is why it's on a shelf for me. And so if we weren't talking about this in the podcast, this is not something I would put publicly. It sort of qualifies question one for me, which is royals not being transparent. Like, that isn't something that immediately rings alarm bells for me. But actually, it doesn't ever move past question one for me because it's too vague what the journalists have said so far. So firstly, the question was about, specifically said, why aren't you following Anne, wherever she was, Sophie in Rome and Edward in Turkey. It was specifically talking about overseas tours. So it wasn't clear to me whether what they were saying applies to engagements that happen in the UK, which is the bulk of their work still. So that was something that I wasn't clear about. Secondly, they basically were saying there's no system in place to follow them and they don't get enough notice. And then the guy, Matt, was his name?
Yes, Matt.
Yeah. He said that they'd had lots of conversations about this, and if they were asked to go by the palace or given notice, they might. That's essentially what he said. And I think it does seem like there's not much notice for overseas visits. So for Edward, it was about 2 weeks' notice that he was going to Turkey. And I think that that probably isn't enough time to organise everything. But I suppose with Sophie, wasn't it a funeral?
Yeah, it was a funeral. Yeah,
so that's not really their fault. Like, funerals tend to happen fairly quickly, so it's not really their fault if they don't give you enough notice for that. They didn't know the guy was going to die. So, I mean, it could be valid that their claim that they aren't getting enough notice for specifically for these overseas engagements, and so they don't have enough time to make requests. But they also mentioned, like, waiting to be asked by the palace and that there isn't a system in place. But we know there is a system in place. There's the rota, which we've just talked about. And under the rota, the press have to ask if they want to go, usually. Like, the local members of the press would ask if they want to go, and not the other way around, that they don't wait for the palace to ask them. And also the host has a say, and it's not just the palace. So I guess, does that mean they're not following the tours because they're not being invited and they don't have enough time to organise something themselves? Or are they putting in requests to go to Anne and Sophie's engagements and been there being told no by somebody? And if they are being told no by somebody, who are they being told no by? Because why would it be the palace and not the NMA? And for what reason are they being given that it's a no? And, you know, engagements at home, as you said, Anne's engagements up till, I checked on the day that I saw those tweets from you, and they went up 6 weeks ahead of time. And that seems to be pretty standard for Anne, that her engagements for the next 6 weeks are in the royal diary. So if that's the case, and they have 6 weeks notice that Anne's going to be doing something in Lancashire or wherever, why is her work hardly covered by the royal rota in the UK when her engagements are announced and the local press go? So there definitely is some kind of mechanism to be able to manage the press, because like I was saying, I was looking at the Liverpool Echo and Princess Anne's engagement in Liverpool, and they were there, and you know, so this is just a lot of questions that I have. I don't think that the information, I know it sounds like a cop-out, but it genuinely is, like, in my robot brain, I can't go to the next stage of the process because I don't have all the information. It's just like error message in my brain at the moment, because I don't understand what they're actually saying, because it sounds like they're blaming the people who are not responsible. They are saying that their system doesn't exist, which it does exist. They're saying that they don't have enough time, but they do have enough time.
Yeah, I think, like, I have multiple strands sort of wiggling out of my head.
Yeah.
And, like, one of those is that they don't sell. There's a reason why at Trooping the Colour, the front picture on the front page of the newspaper is often Louis or Kate and Louis, because people are going to go, oh, that's nice. If you put a picture on of Edward, half the people are going to go, why is Andrew on the front cover of the newspaper? Like,
remember when they all thought that the Queen was married to, or was having a relationship with the Duke of Kent after Philip died? It was like, no, she's not.
Like, they don't sell. They're not big names in the UK. And even if it was covered in all these newspapers, which it is covered in the local media, I think these people wouldn't be reading it anyway. Like, when was the last time they read one of these local articles? Because they clearly haven't, because they do exist. And another strand is that if the Victoria Ward and Matt Wilkinson are so up in arms about it, why don't they do it themselves? Like, not in a way like they go over and above the head of the Royal Rota, but they are journalists. They can say, well, I know that on this date, the Duchess of Gloucester is going to heads up in Gloucestershire. Why don't they contact the Royal Rota, the NMA, contact heads up and be like, look, we'd like to come and cover this as a news story. Would you like someone? Can we do that, please? And then if they say no, that comes from them. I doubt it's from Charles that they're like, Matt Wilkinson's not allowed to cover the Duchess of Gloucester's engagement. I mean, I'm not a member of the NMA, but if I was desperate to cover someone, just ask. Like, that's your job. And one of my other strands is that this kind of misconception that royal reporters are continuously covering the Sussexes, which they're not. Half the time, I don't hear a word from what's happening with the Duke and Duchess of Sussex and their family because they are living a private life. And when you do hear about it, it's either something royal related, because maybe the Invictus Games, they've released a book, they've done an interview. Of course, a royal reporter is going to comment on that. Like, they would also comment if I did a massive public interview that got loads of press attention, because they'd be like, random girl from UK gives insulting interview. Like, it would be, they cover it. But also, there is a whole world of journalists and people who aren't even journalists and just write articles out there who cover what the Sussexes do. And they end up front page because they sell.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sometimes the people writing the articles that you are reading are not the royal correspondents or members of the Royal Rota. They are people writing articles about famous people. My brain is like wiggling around and there's all these different strands going on. And I think they're in both the reporters' tweets and in the public's tweets, there are mistakes, like there are things that are wrong and there are things that don't make sense to me. They're also journalist answers. Like, at no point did they go, we've tried, but Buckingham Palace haven't let us, which would be a really clear answer. Like, they haven't said that at any point.
I think, isn't it Matt's tweet where it says something like, if they provided us with, you know, notice and invited us to go, we might consider it. He didn't even say we would go. He said we might consider it.
We think about maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. So all those, you know, if I think there's two problems of, like, if it is the palace who are blocking them from going, then that's terrible. What they have said, there is not enough information to be able to say that, because it doesn't make sense with the facts that we know are true. It's not clear enough. They haven't sort of said, I requested to go to Princess Anne's engagement and I was told no. You know, that's not what was said. So I think that, you know, there's not enough information anyway. But then the other side of things is the fact that I do not believe the Sun would be going regularly to Princess Anne's engagements if, you know, there was the facility available. Maybe there is the facility available and they just don't know it because they've never actually bothered to think about going.
And they're just like, oh, they're probably not telling us about it. I've never heard personally, so.
Yeah, exactly. The public, the press, there's lots of issues with the press and, you know, I'm not here defending every media outlet and every article they ever write. But I do also think that a lot of people, and I've said this in the past and it's been quite controversial on Tumblr, but like, if you can't say like, it's terrible that this article was written about somebody, or I can't believe that they're still writing about the Sussexes when you click on the articles about the Sussexes. Like, that you're part of the problem. I do believe that the media, some parts of the media, the tabloid media in particular, on occasion write articles that are designed to whip up a frenzy about something that doesn't exist. I do believe that that happens. But I also believe that the public can show what our limits are. So people complained about Jeremy Clarkson. People complained about Piers Morgan. People lose their jobs over things that are said on, you know, the press might write something that is objectionable, but then the public kind of will step in and say, no, that's not okay to us, or yes, that is okay. And a lot of the time in the modern era, that is decided by clicks rather than by actual comments or whatever. And so, yeah, whether you love somebody or hate somebody, if you're clicking on the extreme articles about it, it skews their data. And so they start posting more of those articles, or they keep them at the head of the page longer. It's too complicated and unclear an accusation for me to make any sort of statement about one way or another.
Yeah, I think, you know, part of the message was like, as a taxpayer, shouldn't you, you know, should all royals be open to public scrutiny? And I can tell you how long, I've got no idea whether or not the Sun and the Telegraph have access to Anne's engagements. I don't know. Maybe they've been blocked. But they are open to public scrutiny because there are other articles being written about these engagements. Just because it's not the one newspaper you've read or the one royal correspondent you've looked at. So, you know, I would have an issue, don't get me wrong, if it turned out that Buckingham Palace were blocking access to certain newspapers. You know, that would be a big issue for me because it would go against the royal rota that they helped put in place and agreed to in the 70s. But as it stands, I don't know that's happening. And all I do know is that where possible, there are at least local news covering every royal engagement that is in public. So I can still find the information and make my own judgments on what a royal is doing based on the information I'm given, which is the same thing I do anyway. Even if I have 50 articles about it, I still make my own judgment, not based on what the Sun is telling me.
Well, The Guardian don't pop up at royal engagements and take photographs and write articles about things, but they still talk about the royals, so...
So that is all we have got for this week. We hope you learned something, and if you have any questions or any insight into what is going on, feel free to let us know. Continue to rate us 5 stars at every good podcast directory. Only 5 stars, please.
we can't take criticism. We're too fragile.
And we will be back whenever we are back, because we might not be back straight away. But we'll let you know what happens. But until we are back, it is goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me. That's very enthusiastic.